Scott Ritter, welcome here. Congratulations on the birth of your granddaughter.
Thank you.
Many people are writing to us to express their joy at that event. Did Iran just fire missiles at a U.S. Naval vessel?
The reports are that they have the U.S. Navy. The Iranians claim they hit a U.S. vessel. The Central Command is saying no U.S. ship was hit, but they aren't denying that missiles were fired at a U.S. vessel. We know that missiles were fired at other ships and have hit them, and those ships are have either diverted or are, you know, dead in the water, burning right now. We also know that Iran has fired missiles and drones into energy infrastructure inside United Arab Emirates, and that we have Bahrain declaring a state of emergency, Kuwait declaring a state of emergency, Iran ordering its southern energy fields evacuated. So there's a lot going on right now.
All right, I have to jump to Ukraine to ask you a couple of questions. Recently, the Iranians have struck Moscow, even a residential neighborhood, for three nights in a row. Does that surprise you that they were able to reach into the residential areas of Moscow where you and I have visited?
Yeah, I think you meant the Ukrainians, not the Iranians.
I meant to say Ukrainians. Hence the look on your face. Yes, thank you.
I do this all the time myself, so it's okay. Because we have two conflicts going on that you know, are both, you know, very serious conflicts. I was just in Moscow last month. I had asked people there, you know, about Iranian drone attacks, and they said that, you know, Moscow had built up a fairly decent defense and that it was very difficult for drones to get through. But it doesn't surprise me that drones are able to get through. You know, I've been following Russian developments in drone technologies, and there are, you know, drones, of course, are guided. And there's, I don't want to go on and on and on about how this works, but, you know, there are standard technologies that drones can use. They can upload to, you know, Starlink is something they use. They also tap into a local, you know, cell phone infrastructure to communicate and to receive guidance. And then there's a blending of the two. The Russians have done something pretty neat where they have sort of their own neural network of drones, and the drones can adapt. So you can send a swarm of drones in, and as they get shot down or nullified, the drones sort of learn in the process and adapt and make adjustments. And I think the Ukrainians, who are literally right behind the Russians or in parallel with, in some cases ahead of the Russians, have similar technology. So it doesn't surprise me that if you fire enough drones into a problem set, that they're going to get through. We've seen this in their strikes in Tuops. We've seen that in their strikes in Primorsk and other areas. So no, it doesn't surprise me that the Ukrainians were able to leak drones through. What surprises me is the lack of decisive response on the part of Russia. You know, we're getting to the point right now where this is almost becoming embarrassing for Russia. I mean, it is embarrassing for Russia, but normally Russia can point to the scoreboard and say, you know, we're doing, but it's some, you know, because normally trick plays don't win a game. You know that, you know, you can be behind, you do the hook and ladder, and everybody goes, wow, that was cool, but can you do six more in a row? But the Ukrainians now are doing significant harm to Russian energy infrastructure. You know, they at a time when Russia should be able to maximize export capabilities to earn money at this point of highest earning potential, the Ukrainians are throttling this down. It's not permanent damage, but it's damage nonetheless. And you combine this also with these Ukrainian drone swarms are, you know, the Russians have tracked it. They're flying through Poland and the Baltic states to strike St. Petersburg. They're going through Turkey into Georgia, through Azerbaijan and up the Caspian Sea through Kazakhstan to strike the interior of Russia. They're bypassing, you know, standard air defense concentrations. This is an act of war for nations to allow their airspace to be used in this manner. And yet the Russians to date have done nothing. And I understand that the Russians want to avoid, you know, are conducting escalation management. But at some point in time, the Russians are going to have to do something to stop this, or else the Ukrainians are, they run the risk of altering the strategic balance. I'm not going to say it's going to shift their favor, but you know, this is a time when Europe is rattled, is shooken. The United States is, you know, indicating that we're not there behind them. And the last thing you need to do is, if you're Russia, is to have the Europeans saying, hey, this is working. This strategy of ours is working. We can double down on this. This is the time when you need Europe to disengage and say, no, we need to bring it into this conflict. But instead, Ukraine's successes are being used to solidify European resolve. And that's just not the direction I believe Russia should be going in.
The special military operation has been going on for 4+ years. Does President Putin have the will to win?
Of course he does. Of course he has the will to win. It's absurd to suggest otherwise. Strategic commitment that's been made to this. The people who say that, and I think I know where you're coming from, Judge, because those aren't your words. Those are other people's words. That means they don't have a clue that war isn't about what's happening. First of all, if you focus on what's happening on the battlefield, you understand that Russia is completely committed to winning a war of attrition. A war of attrition that, you know, isn't designed to have the Russians. This isn't the Yankees versus the Confederacy where the Union's willing to lose everybody. This would be a war of attrition with the, you know, with the Yankees saying we want to minimize casualties while we maximize Confederate casualties. That's the Russian approach. And it's working. Why does Russia need to do that? Because Russia isn't going to sacrifice its economy. Its economy, people tend to forget that Russia was subjected to, you know, stringent sanctions that were designed to buckle the Russian economy. The goal of the U.S. European sanctions program was to terminate the viability of Russia's economy. Russia's done the exact opposite. Russia has not only stabilized their economy is thriving, but they only thrives because you're not sacrificing all of your manpower in Ukraine, because you are allocating significant resources to sustaining civilian commerce. It's the genius of the Russian system. So those people who say Russia's not fully focused means you haven't a clue what's going on, because if Russia had done what everybody said they should have done, their economy wouldn't be doing what it's doing today, which is successful. And it's not just that the civilian side of the economy, Russia's outperforming the world in defense industry. The Russians have taken the defense industry that was largely dormant and have activated, brought it up to wartime functioning, and are pumping out missiles and tanks and everything else in numbers that people can't even imagine. It's not just about supporting what's going on in the special military operation. This is about Russia rebuilding their military, going from 900,000 to 1.6 million to over 2 million. Now, when you increase the numbers of troops that way, they need equipment. Where's that equipment coming from? From the factories that are not only supplying a war of attrition, which means you're taking casualties, but building new formations, not with just the first frontline order, but to sustain combat. Russia knows what it means. Once you engage, you have to have the missiles, the artillery shells, the fuel, and everything stockpiled up to keep the war going. Russia is doing this. We're the side that has nothing left. We're the side that has our armories emptied. The Russians know what they're doing. So when people say, does Putin have the commitment to do this? You don't know what you're talking about, Gilbert Doctorow.
I knew you were going to throw that. I knew you were going to throw that in there. What do you think President Putin said on the phone to President Trump last week, when, according to the Russian readout and the American reports, he said, don't restart that war?
Well, remember, what precipitated this was a visit by Foreign Minister Araghchi, the Iranian foreign minister.
Who was received by President Putin himself.
Correct. And they had a conversation. It wasn't, you know, Araghchi, is a foreign minister, is in no position to come and dictate anything to a Russian president. So Araghchi wasn't going there threatening the Russian president. He was going there to offer insight into the Iranian thinking and to talk to the Russian president about, you know, strategic geopolitical realities. You know, Iran has made it clear that this there is no alternative for victory on their terms. People need to realize that when the United States and Israel began this conflict back in February 28th with our surprise attack while negotiations were taking place that would have resolved the nuclear issue, an act of perfidy, a war crime, that we launched this not to punish Iran, but to destroy Iran. One interesting thing came out in the past week. We now know that Israel took air defense systems from Israel and deployed them to the United Arab Emirates, not just the systems, but Israeli troops. So Israeli troops on the ground defending a Gulf Arab nation from Iran, defending. They were part of the offensive against Iran, which is why the UAE is being hit today, by the way. Everybody's like, they're victims. They're not victims. They participated in the surprise attack against against Iran. But this is not a war that Iran can, you know, walk away from or give the United States something. This is existential survival, and it's linked to the existential survival of Russia and China as well. And the Russians know this, that if Iran goes, they will go, China will go. This is not, you know, that's just the way it is. So the Iranians said, this is what we have to do. We have to maintain some sort of deterrent value, which is to put the United States on notice that if you resume military operations, we will terminate the ability of the Gulf Arab states to not just produce energy, but to exist. They will die. And here is, that's hyperbole, Scott. I don't know. Gosh, go to Kuwait City, shut down all the desalination plants. Tell me what happens in the weeks to follow when there's no fresh water.
Well, there'll be no people.
Bingo. But it's not just this. You know, what's happening in the world today, everybody's focused on oil. Of course, oil is a big deal. But, you know, a large part of the world's fertilizers come from the Middle East, and they're not getting out. This is springtime. You know, my grandfather, Marina's father, was a great gardener. You know, he's passed, but we still have the remnants of his garden. This is the planting season. You know, you go out and you sow the fields. And if you're doing mass production of food, which we have to do in order to feed the global population, you need mass amounts of fertilizer, which is not available now thanks to Donald Trump. So we're facing a famine. We're facing energy slide. We're facing problems with advanced industries that need, for instance, helium. A large amount of helium production coming out of Qatar, not anymore. So there's a helium shortage. That's the end of that. You know, this summer is going to be a very, very difficult summer. Lufthansa, major European airline, 20,000 flights canceled. They are going to run out of aviation fuel in a matter of weeks. And when that happens, it's not just that the airplanes will be grounded, that businesses will go out of business. Several major European air companies right now are no longer training flight attendants and pilots. And if you've ever run a business, you know you never stop the training. You even, for instance, when the U.S. military was reducing their forces, we always recruited new people because you're not inserting new blood. It's the end. It's over. So basically, Donald Trump is killing European aviation. He could be killing American aviation. It's not just Spirit that's going under. A lot of these airlines are operating on, you know, razor-thin margins right now, and now he's going to screw them up by jacking up already fuel prices through the roof. You see Delta Airlines canceling flights because they can't afford the fuel right now. That's a major airline canceling flights because they can't afford fuel. That's here in the United States. So this is what Araghchi told Putin. We're going to do this. We have to. We have to have this nuclear bomb, this economic nuclear bomb, to deter American irresponsibility. And Putin made the phone call. He made the phone call, which is rare. And he only does that to make certain points. And this point he made is, do not do this because the consequences will be mind-blowing. But the problem is Vladimir Putin is speaking to an insane individual. And we have to call it as we see it, Judge. The President of the United States is not a rational human being right now. He is a man who suffers from extreme narcissistic personality disorder. Scott, you have Trump derangement syndrome. I don't know. What do you call it when a guy illegally renames the Kennedy Center? The Trump Kennedy Center. Can't do it by law, but he did it. This is a man who's building monuments to himself. He he fantasized about having his head on Mount Rushmore. I just came from Washington, D.C. They have banners with his stupid face staring down at you throughout Washington, D.C. This has never happened before in American history. And we have this narcissist out there who has populated a world that doesn't exist. He has Scott Bessent receiving information from the Freedom of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, which is an adjunct of the Israeli Foreign Ministry, getting advice about Iranian energy realities that don't exist. Iran is about to run out of storage capacity. No, they're not. Not even close. Iran can't earn any money. They can't pay their soul. If you go to the Pakistani border, Scott Bessent, let me tell you, call up the geospatial imagery people and say, give me satellite imagery of the Pakistani-Iranian border and count the trucks that are going in and out, and then calculate the amount of fuel that's going back and forth. Understand that all of it's being paid for in hard currency that's going to the Iranians. We live in a fantasy world. Our blockade is very successful. Our blockade hasn't been successful at all. Iran is pumping ships out, and that ships are going off, and they're making hard currency. You know, Scott Bessent lives in a fantasy world. Pete Hegseth is saying, we can do this. We can't do anything. We lost the 40-day war. There's no way we can win the next war. You know, Dark Eagle, you know, that new hypersonic missile that we got out there, game changer. We got one battery, 8 missiles, at $41 million each. There aren't going to be any more than that. And they don't work. We don't even know what the lethality of these are, you see, because we've never tested them against the hardened targets. So all the people saying, we've got Dark Eagle going to reach in and touch and take out the Iranian ballistic missile cities, and we're going to do. Dude, we got 8 missiles that don't work. We're going to destroy nothing. Trump lives in a fantasy world of his own creation. I'm an analyst that spent my entire life connecting the dots. Sometimes I get it wrong. I'll admit it. A lot of times I get it right. And I've gotten it right in a lot of high-profile, high-pressure situations. But it's very difficult right now to sit here and try and figure out what's going on in Washington, D.C., because the map that I use and the dots I use don't exist in Donald Trump's brain. He lives in a fantasy world populated by dots that are just figments of his own imagination or whispered suggestions from sycophants who are there to stroke the ego of this extreme narcissist, which is the last thing you need to be doing with a narcissist. The Iranians may have done him a favor today because they've punched him in the nose. And hopefully it broke the nose, and Donald Trump's bleeding from the nose, figuratively, of course. And he's going to snap out of it and go, whoa, we have to stop this right now. Vladimir Putin told me what the consequences of this will be. And the consequences will be dire. Not just for Trump. He's politically dead.
Yeah, so we got 2 phone calls last week, one from Vladimir Putin and one from Miriam Adelson.
Yeah. Well, you know, Miriam, she needs to run to Israel and hide. Because Trump's going to lose the midterm elections. He can't win. He had a chance. He blew it. And so it's over for him. Now the question is, is he going to be more than just impeached, or is he going to be convicted? And if he keeps doing this stupidity, he'll be convicted because he'll lose the Senate and margins that are capable of achieving conviction. And that's the end of it. He got off the helicopter with Donald Trump Jr., one of the most corrupt individuals in the world. People need to understand how these people are playing the market, how what they're doing here is designed to make people millions of dollars, not by building things that make America great again, but by cheating, insider trading, market manipulation. We suffer. Our 401k plans go away. Our retirement goes away. They make money. Miriam Adelson needs to understand that she's going to be blamed for this, as she should be, and she needs to get the hell out of Dodge. MAGA is finished. This is the reality of it. We're going to be looking at a political, revolution isn't the right word, but it's going to be political calamity as America tries to understand how to go forward. But it's not going to be with Donald Trump as a viable president. He may serve another 2 years if he doesn't get convicted. But his presidency is over, and he knows it now, which means this insane individual now is going to be even more desperate to try and do something radical to change the direction that we're on.
Well, what happens if he listens to Miriam Adelson and Netanyahu and Pete Hegseth? And resumes a heavy-duty bombing campaign.
The American economy collapses totally in the summer of 2026.
For the reasons you've just articulated. Can the Iranians withstand another 40 days of bombing?
They already withstood the first 40 days. Did we get any better? I mean, normally if you're fighting a 15-round match, and you've gone in and you've punched yourself out in 7 rounds, do you expect suddenly to be able to punch even harder in the last 7 rounds? No, you're exhausted. Your body's spent. The Iranians weren't hurt in this 40 days. Again, I just want to point out the reality that we did no damage to Iran. None. And when I was a weapons inspector in Iraq, General Al-Ubaidi was the oil minister. He was also the head of defense industry. He ordered a study done on a battle damage assessment, basically from the Iraqi perspective, what damage was done during Desert Storm, which was one of the greatest strategic air campaigns ever. It turns out we did no damage. We blew up a lot of buildings, empty buildings. But the strategic infrastructure, the production capacity that we were trying to destroy had all been evacuated and hidden. And it was the weapons inspectors that were able to go in, find it, and destroy it. But the bombing campaign did nothing. The Iranians learned from that, and they learned because, remember, June gave them a run-up on what could happen. So by the time we came rolling back in February 28th, there was nothing of substance to be bombed. We spent 40 days basically emptying our arsenals, and we accomplished absolutely nothing. So why does anybody believe that we can suddenly get it right this time around? We don't know what we're bombing. We don't know where things are. Pete Hegseth is in the business of just making things go boom and declaring victory. Remember, this is a president who was shown war porn every night as an intelligence briefing. That's it. Hegseth went in and got the best things that went boom and put in front of the president. But it turns out half the stuff that he was watching going boom were decoys. The other half were empty buildings. And that's all we accomplished. Nothing.
Let me get back to President Putin. He also had a phone call with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. What did he say to him?
I don't know. Putin here you have to remember that, I think 20% of the Israeli population are Russian citizens. And Putin has said, when we speak of the Russian nation, not the Russian, but Rusaini, the larger nation, Israel factors into it because it has a large percentage of Russian Jews living in Israel. But I also think that he was putting the Israelis on notice that there will be consequences to resuming the conflict. I also believe that he was putting them on notice helping the Ukrainians strike Russia. I think Russia is putting together the naughty list. At some point in time, as I said, they can't continue to allow these drones to strike with impunity. And there will be
the Israelis helped the Ukrainians strike Russia.
Yeah.
Mossad.
Mossad, Amman, the Israeli government, technologies are being provided to the Ukrainians to facilitate the operation of their drones.
Wow. Who wins the waiting game? I'm talking about the U.S. and Iran.
Iran. Iran has all the cards. I mean, there's a perfect meme, Donald Trump going, I got all the cards, except they were Uno cards, and the purpose of Uno is not to have all the cards. And then the Iranians are showing their hand and they say, yeah, you've got all the cards because we're winning. Iran wins this. Iran easily wins this. Again, I my wife tells me don't read the comments. There's people in the Ritter's talking shit. Maybe, but I don't think so. when this war started, the Middle East produces 20%, 22% of the world's energy. Kuwait in the month of April exported zero. Bahrain's in the similar position. None of that energy, 22%, made it out, very small amounts of it. That means that, and if you know anything about the energy, that once things get flowing, it takes time. I mean, it's not instant. We don't open the Strait of Hormuz today and tomorrow have gasoline in the gas station. It has to flow. It takes weeks, if not months, to get to destination. It gets stored. It then gets processed. It gets out, enters the manufacturing process, turned into gas, plastics, whatever, and then it has to make its way to market. So by the time it gets to market, we are literally talking several months after it entered the pipeline. So we today are sitting there going, well, it's not that bad. I mean, we're paying a little bit more at the gas pump, but that's, you know, that's because of traders and market manipulation, but everything's working out. We still got stuff. Guys, it's over. The last stuff that went in on February 28th has reached the end. It's reached market. Nothing's come in the pipeline since then. Nothing. And so we are going to be looking at a total collapse. Who wins the waiting game? Iran.
Scott Ritter, thank you very much, my dear friend.